Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, the one-time host of Celebrity Poker Showdown, a man who's got over $2.8 million in tournament winnings and was the winner of this year's Antioch for Africa tournament at the World Series of Poker, Phil Gordon, will join us later on. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's here in St. Louis, while my partner Dennis Phillips is out of the country once again, forcibly evicted from his homeland. No, actually, voluntarily left the country again to head to Calgary, Canada. What are you doing up there, Dennis?
I'm being amazed a little bit, actually. I'd never been in Calgary before. I had no idea. Calgary's got like 1.1 million in it. It's got some fantastic restaurants. The place is absolutely gorgeous up here. There's some nice skiing resorts. I'm pleasantly amazed. And the people up here are sort of like your typical Midwesterner, just friendly people, willing to help you out the whole bit. It's a pleasant surprise. I'm tickled to death up here, actually.
But you're not there on vacation. You're working, right?
Nope. This is true. I am playing some poker.
What's the event?
They have a 5K heads up going on here with 64 people entered into it, basically mano a mano, sit across the table and play it. And one of the reasons I came up here, well, Kelly Kellner is the owner of it, the Canadian Poker Tour and the Canadian Poker Open. And he invited me up here, and I checked out the structure, and it is a phenomenal setup for the 5K.
Now, you mentioned last week before you were going up there that you really like the structure of this, and I got an email from a listener named Don who said, can you explain a little bit more about that? He says, I know Dennis played in the NBC Heads Up earlier this year. What makes this structure in Canada so much better than that one or other Heads Up events he's played?
Well, to start out with, they're 20-minute rounds rather than like the NBC was a 15-minute one. On this one, you start out with 10,000 in chips, and you're starting out at 2550 and then going up. Plus, they cap it. When it reaches 500 and 1,000, that's it. Now, you know, obviously getting to that level will be difficult, but the blinds will never go any higher than that. So, you know, starting with 10,000, there's 20,000 on it. With a 1,000 big blind, it's going to be nasty anyhow. But they actually had a match last year that went on for 2 hours.
Wow.
At the 1,000 level.
Wow.
Yeah, it lasted 7.5 hours before they got through this thing.
That's an enormously long time for a heads-up match.
And the other thing about this is every match is 2 out of 3. So that 2 hours of that level actually was 2 different matches. They took them about an hour to get through it the one time and then another hour on the third and deciding one.
All right, so,
7.5 hours to decide a heads-up match.
All right, so let me ask you this then. You say it's 2 out of 3. You got to.
Yes.
When you start a new heads-up game, do you go back to 25-50 blinds and start from there, or do you continue along at what your blinds were when you stopped?
No. You go back and start the beginning. So it's a brand new game, a brand new deal. That's why I love the structure. If you get drawn out on, if you just have extremely bad cards and get shipped down, that's only one. You still got somebody's got to beat you 2 out of 3.
How does a structure like that, where it's 2 out of 3, affect your play in the first round? I mean, are you going to take more risks in the first round, knowing, all right, if I lose this one, I still have 2 more I can win?
Not necessarily. On that first round, you're still feeling the guy out, but you're going to be playing him now for several hours. You're going to be playing him, and it really brings a skill into it. If you can start getting some reads, starting in some betting patterns, really getting to know the tendencies of the other player, and vice versa on that. If he thinks he starts getting to know you, and you can switch your game then, and you switch gears, and you start playing it a little bit different, you can really throw these guys off tilt.
I got another email from a guy named Tommy who said he heard you mention that you were going to do this, and he watched you on the NBC Heads Up earlier this year, and he heard you talking on this show about how with most of your opponents at the NBC Heads Up, you raised the button almost every time. When you were the small blind on the button, you raised almost every time. Tommy wants to know, if you're the other guy who's the big blind, how do you deal with somebody who's doing that almost every time? You probably have played against players who've used that strategy against you. How have you handled it?
I absolutely have. And you have to defend yourself. And what you hope is that it isn't the time when he actually has a hand like Pocket Kings or whatever the heck. But you can't let somebody run over the table. If he's continually raising it, even with a mediocre hand, you're going to have to re-raise him. You're going to have to fight back. You're going to have to establish that he can't run over you and dominate the table.
Because he's going to be
scary.
He's going to be raising light a good part of the time, right?
Correct. Absolutely has to. You know, random hands. This guy, you know, is going to have worse than a queen eight majority of the time. So, you know, that's raising light.
And when you're doing that, and you're the person who's on the button as the small blind, and you're doing all of that raising in that situation, are you hoping that when you're moving with any two cards, not necessarily a premium hand, are you hoping you're going to get called and then do some after flop play?
Well, definitely you can do that. You'll take down a lot of pots pre-flop. You won't see as many flops by doing that. But the continuation bet then is so scary to your opponent. He has absolutely – you realize you don't catch any part of the flop. You know, 70 or 80% of the time, you miss the flop completely.
Yeah.
But, you know, the vice versa, so does your opponent. However, if you have position on him, if you're the one that's able to make that continuation, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that maybe you have ace five and you flopped a two fives or who knows what the heck, anything. It could be a monster hand.
Yep.
So it really, really puts the pressure on your opponent then.
Yeah, you could have raised up with 10-6 and, you know, here comes 9-8-7 and,
there you,
you know, boom, you're off to the races. He's playing ace 10, trying to be cute and clever, and he's, you know, flops the open-ender and you've already flopped the nuts. I can see where there'd be trouble there.
It absolutely would. If you want, I've got an unbelievable hand I could tell you about the play yesterday. What did not involve me.
Yeah, please.
But I was watching it.
Okay.
They're playing two out of three. Paul won the first round, a guy that I'd met up here, a very good cash player, won the first one. They're playing the second one. He looks down at, I believe it was an ace nine of diamonds. Raises, out of position, but he raises. The guy smooth calls him. Flop is a 2-5-6, all diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable, right?
That's nice when you flop the joint.
Yeah, not too bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it works out all right. Anyhow, he made what he hoped was looked like a continuation bet. The guy raised him, so he's over there, you know, with happy feet under the table. And to make a long story short, they get it all in on the flop. He stands up, throws his ace high flush down there, raises his hands up in salute, thinking he's got the second one won.
3-4 of diamonds.
You got it.
Straight flush.
The guy flopped a straight flush.
Yeah. You know what's not good about flopping the joint? When the other guy flops the bigger joint. The absolute stone joint. Wow.
It was... He had a slim chance. He had to have the seven of diamonds and the eight of diamonds come on the turn in the river.
Which they didn't, of course.
Of course not.
Yeah. Now, did you talk to him about this hand afterwards and ask him if the straight flush entered into the range of hands he put his opponent on?
Not a chance. Not a chance in the world. And to be honest about it, not a chance would it enter my mind. I'm looking down that I have technically the second nuts on it, but this is an unbelievable one. And the odds on him having those two particular cards is so astronomical, it wouldn't even enter your mind.
Right. Right.
What you're worried about when you get it all in is that he's flopped a set. And now he has seven outs on the turn and 10 outs on the river.
Right.
So you're a long ways from being secure.
Yeah.
But you know you've got the best hand right now.
Yeah. When you flop it, you don't want the guy to have any part of it. Or you want him to have a little bit less than you do. You want him to have the king high flush when you've got the ace high flush. Yeah, so he's drawing dead against you. Anybody we know who's playing up there besides you, of course?
Absolutely, and it was a random draw, so it was quite hilarious. The night before, we were out at one of the local places that Kelly has rented, just having a kind of a relaxing time. I was there with everybody from Brad Booth to Gavin Smith to Lacey Jones and the rest of them. We were just, you know, talking randomly about, oh, this is going to be an interesting, what if Brad and I match up on the first round, or what if Gavin and Lacey match up in the first round, and all this other stuff. Well, guess what happened?
What?
Gavin Smith... Lacey Jones, first round, sitting across from each other.
Wow.
Now, Lacey had played the women's event up here and finished ninth in it. Actually got a little bit cold, ran out of cards, basically. Didn't catch much of anything when she made the final table and finished ninth, but did very well up here. And the two of them then sat down for kind of a marquee matchup. And Lacey won.
Congratulations to Lacey. Because Gavin was distracted, right?
Well, that could happen anytime, granted.
Hey, is Gavin up there with his fiancée?
Yes. Casey is up here. They're having fun. She had never been here before that I know of. And, of course, Gavin is from Canada and around. He's been here a number of times.
Yeah. What is she, about 6 months pregnant now? Because we talked to him this summer at the series. He was talking about looking forward to a kid this fall. She's got to be about 6 months or so.
I believe she's expecting in November.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, that'll put it right on the money there.
Thank you.
Any of the guys from the November 9 travel up to Calgary for this?
Matt Jarvis is up here. Had a nice talk with him. He's actually, I've asked him to be on the show next week, and he's agreed.
Oh, terrific.
So Matt will be on with us next week and talking about it. We've had a little bit of a discussion. I'll probably have another one before we leave here. He had some interesting questions to ask me. And, of course, it's all new to him, the same as it is for anybody that gets on a November 9. And he's just kind of picking my brain a little bit about what happened to me.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, you've been very generous in offering your services to any of these guys who want some help, because you were there as one of the first November Niners in 2008, and I know you've offered a lot of great advice to a lot of them. So that'll be good. We'll look forward to having Matt Jarvis on the show next week. Have you played any other events besides this 5K? By the way, what happened in your first round of the 5K? You didn't get Brad Booth as your opponent. Who'd you get?
The gentleman I had didn't play very well. In fact, I never lost a hand the whole time. Did
really?
I? Yeah. There were 64 spots up here. They had 56 entries when they were ready to start, which means 8 people got byes on a random draw.
Uh-huh.
I got one of the byes.
Wow.
Oh, it gets even better than that. They had 4 more people walk in for a late sign-up. And every time they'd pull out one of the names that had the bye because they'd have to play this guy. And every time I kept expecting to hear Dennis Phillips come on down, and it never happened. I ended up with a bye on the first round. So I've advanced to the round of 32 without playing a hand.
Well, congratulations. And by the way, that's a good strategy to go in with, playing for the bye.
I figured that I'm probably odds on to make 32 than when you get a bye.
Nice going there. did you play any other events in this Canadian Poker Open that's going on?
When we got up here, late Friday night, like 2:30 in the morning. Then I did play at noon on Saturday, a 1K event. They had a couple hundred people in it. It's a nice event. I didn't do that well. I got in the top half, but I never got above starting chips. Starting chips were 10,000. I never got above it. I got down low enough that I had like between four and five big blinds left and shoved it and lost.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. It's poker.
Yeah.
But it was fun. Made some new friends. Got to kind of adjust myself to Calgary. Since then, though, we've visited all around here. Last night, we went to the 360 Tower to have supper, which is a revolving restaurant 500 feet in the air that overlooks all of Calgary.
Uh-huh.
Awesome, circling around up there. Sky 360, I think is what they call it.
I've had bad experiences in revolving restaurants at the top of a tower. I think there's a combination or a bad combination when it comes to quality of food and altitude. You know, airline food is notoriously the worst food you can have, but I've also been to the top of, like, the CN Tower or any other tall building, even the windows on the world at the World Trade Center when it was still around, was up there and had something to eat, and the food was mediocre at best. How was it at the top of this tower in Calgary?
Actually, the couple of meals we've eaten up here, the evening meals, have been phenomenal in their diversity. We're eating candied trout, smoked bison, pickled wax beans. I mean, the menu is very interesting, to say the least.
You are leading such a tough life. I can just hear our listeners thinking that. Here's a guy who 2 years ago, was selling trucks for a living, and now you're eating pickled trout and candied wax beans and whatever it is. I don't even know. All right, let's move on to a couple of other things before we bring Phil Gordon in here. They have opened up nominations for the Poker Hall of Fame. We talked recently about the Women in Poker Hall of Fame, which Jen Harmon and Kathy Liebert have been will be inducted into on September 3rd. Now they're looking at the Poker Hall of Fame class of 2010. You may remember last year, Mike Sexton was the only one to get 75% of the votes from the panel once they had narrowed it down to the final 16 or something like that. This year they've decided that to get in, you have to get 50% of the votes. And what it will be is the 16 people who've already been elected into the Poker Hall of Fame and a select list of poker media people who will get in there as well. They have started the online nominations, and so far 181 different people have been nominated. That's a little excessive, isn't it?
Just a little bit, yes.
You'll remember that last year Tom Dwan was one of the people nominated, but the committee said, you know, it's 23 years old, and one of the things, the criteria for getting into the Hall of Fame is having stood the test of time.
Right.
He has not stood the test of time yet. Yeah, he's acknowledged as one of the top players in the world. Yes, he's played for high stakes. Yes, he's played consistently well. Yes, he has the respect of his peers. But he's not stood the test of time yet. And I have a feeling that if we got the 181 people who were named thus far, a lot of those would be people who have also not stood the test of time.
Well, I even take it a step further, because I guarantee that Howard Lederer and Daniel Negreanu and Phil Ivey, and I can name a host of others that are going to be and deservedly should be in the Hall of Fame, but they're right now actively playing. They're right now in the peak of their career. Why would you want them in the Hall of Fame right now? I think it should be a selective crew, and it should be limited. In fact, the 75%, I think, actually makes more sense to me than the 50%.
Do you think that there should be a minimum age to get in? I mean, all of those guys that you just mentioned are in their 30s, except for Howard, who is in his 40s now. Should there be a minimum age? Should you be at least 50 years old? Should you have been playing poker professionally for a certain number of years before you get considered for this?
Well, I think there seems to be a general guideline, you know, and maybe those are ones that 10 years experience or over 50 years of age, a significant contribution to poker and everlasting. It doesn't have to even be at the table. I think we commented before about Howard Lederer, the stuff he does behind the table, the stuff he's done in Washington, how he has promoted poker and tried to bring it forward as an active sport available to all people, should count toward him getting into the Hall of Fame. There's lots of things other than just sitting at the felt and winning tournaments.
The other people who did not make it last year, who would, to me, be instant nominees for this year, are Phil Ivey and our friend Tom McAvoy and, and Daniel, Eric Seidel, Dan Harrington, Scotty Wynn, Men the Master Wynn, and Barry Greenstein. I think an easy argument could be made for pretty much all of those guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Eric Seidel doesn't get anywhere near the notoriety he deserves. Great guy, the bracelets he's won, the way he plays.
Yep.
Barry, the traveling he's done, all the charity work he's done. Yeah, that's a great list there, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with Phil Gordon, a guy who contributed to the poker world by getting celebrities to play our game on television for several years on the Bravo Network on Celebrity Poker Showdown, and the guy behind Bad Beat on Cancer, a charity I know that is close to your heart. This portion of The Final Table is brought to you by PokerStars.net, and pretty soon it's time for the World Championship of Online Poker. Right, Dennis?
That's right. It starts on September 5th. It runs and runs and runs. The amount of tournaments, the amount of guarantees, this is over $50 million guaranteed in these tournaments over those 2 weeks. And you can play at any level you want. You can start in there at the PokerStars.net, play for free, practice your game, and get in on these and work your way up. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. I was just looking around here in August, which is supposed to be the off time for poker playing, and I find out that there are Poker Stars tournaments going on in Latin America. There are Poker Stars tournaments going on in Russia, in Estonia, over in Europe, over in Australia. For being the, quote, downtime of poker, this is unbelievable.
Yeah. The thing here is that you listen to Dennis on this show talking about his travels around the world, and like I said, you think to yourself, boy, what a life this guy's leading. You could live that life, too, by winning entry into a lot of these big tournaments by playing on PokerStars.net. So find the find the poker star in you at PokerStars.net. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. He's Dennis Phillips in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. We're right back with more of The Final Table. Our podcasts are on theshipleader.com. Our radio broadcasts are on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And we're joined today by another poker millionaire, Phil Gordon, who won the Ante Up for Africa event at the World Series of Poker this year. He had two other cashes at the series. He's got two WPT titles and total tournament winnings of over $2.8 million. He's also the guy behind Bad Beat on Cancer and the annual Rochambeau tournament, and also the co-host of his own poker podcast for ESPN called The Poker Edge. Phil Gordon, welcome to The Final Table.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to talk to you, Dennis. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit, but I always love talking. Phil, for you guys that don't know it, Phil has basically led an unbelievable life. I mean, this guy started, what were you, 15 when you went to college, and then you had your own company, and then you started doing elephant safaris and road trips across the country, and you've got to write another book.
It's been a pretty good run, but you know what? I just turned 40 about a couple weeks ago, and I think the best stuff is yet to come, man. You know, I got two beautiful young boys. I've got a fantastic wife, and you know, poker's been good, and you know, just kind of hanging in there and really enjoying the being a dad, you know. That's the most important thing in my life right now.
Phil, I saw Andy Block and a couple of other pros tweeting about going to your 40th birthday, but they didn't tell us. They didn't tell us what the celebration was. What did you have for your birthday?
I've got a ranch up in Washington State, and I had 30 guys fly up for 4 days. My wife took the kids up to Vancouver to see her parents, and basically gave us the run of the place by ourselves. And, you know, we had a huge competition throughout the four-day weekend, all leading up to a poker tournament. So the top 10 point earners in various competitions throughout the weekend made it to the final table. And it was pretty cool. We had one of the prizes for first place was a ride in the Vomit Comet. Have you heard about that? It's the plane that goes out of Cape Canaveral that NASA uses to train astronauts.
Is that the one that Ron Howard used when he was filming scenes for
exactly.
Apollo 13? Yeah, wow.
Exactly. So the winner of that tournament got to go with me and my buddy Rafe, who put up the prize on the Vomit Comet. I think we're all going in December or something like that. It should be a lot of fun.
Have you ever done that before?
Are you kidding? No. It's like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Although, you know, it won't be too long before all of us can just, you know, hop on a plane to New Mexico and then end up in space in a couple hours.
That's true.
Well, I'm kind of curious about what kind of competition, what kind of a contest you had there among these guys.
Well, there were, you know, about 12 different events that you could compete in, and then everyone was given a certain number of chips when they arrived at the party, and then basically you gambled and conned your way into as many chips as you could possibly get, and the top 10 chip holders at the end of the weekend made it to the final table. Stuff like horseshoes and kayaking, and you know, there was a triathlon race here, hitting golf balls, Chinese poker, regular poker. It was just basically a nonstop gamble fest for 4 days. It was fantastic.
Wow. What a great guy's weekend.
It was really spectacular. And, you know, kudos to my wife for both thinking it up and making it all happen. You know, it was tough to get 30 guys coordinated, but she made it all possible. It's pretty special.
You know, maybe when I turn 40, I'll do that. Yeah, right.
So you're up in Calgary, huh?
Yes, I am. It's gorgeous up here, I have to admit.
Yeah, you're not too far from me, actually. My place is about 50 miles from the Canadian border, and I guess you're about a 4 or 5 hour drive up that way, although I have not driven it. I'm looking forward to getting up there to check it out. And I heard that the Canadian Poker Championship is going to be really great this year.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I mean, we had some interesting matches to start with. I love Lacey Jones sitting down against Gavin Smith. That was a fun one to listen to.
Who won that match?
Lacey did. Kicked his butt.
Yeah, wow, nice. Nice. And who'd you play first round?
Pardon?
Who'd you play first round?
I got a bye on the first round. Four people drew byes, and I was one of them. So sometimes I run good.
That is running very good. Yeah.
Phil, at the
I had a pretty deep run myself at the World Series Heads Up Championship this year, the 10K, and made it down to the round of 16, and then got it all in on a flip at a 2-1 favorite and lost, and then got it all in again shortly thereafter and lost, and then it was basically game over. But that tournament was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, you know, Phil, in the last segment, because Dennis is playing in this heads-up event in Canada, we were talking a little bit about heads-up strategy, and he was talking about how when he was on NBC heads-up earlier this year, he raised the button pretty much every single time. We talked about that strategy and how to play against that strategy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's, that's traditional heads-up strategy, right? I mean, you want to put pressure when you have position and build a pot when you have position and, get them to fold some hands. And, you just can't fold too many hands heads-up. So, if most of the time I employ that strategy where I'm going to raise 80-85% of my hands on the button and then maybe fold 10 or 15%. But, again, some opponents, that strategy might not work so effectively. And, one of the things that I've done to counter that strategy is 3-bet a lot. And that seems to work if you can pick up some hands and your opponent doesn't have good hands. But, in a lot of these NBC heads up and, the other kind of tournaments, you're starting relatively short stacked. And, it's pretty tough to 3-bet because you're basically getting pot committed pretty quickly. And those super turbo structures where you only have 40 big blinds, it's hard to put in, 8 and 10 big blinds and then fold. It's just it's a pretty brutal structure for some of those tournaments. But I think generally that's a very effective strategy.
Well, this one allows for a little more play. You're playing 2 out of 3 instead of just a single heads up. It's 20-minute rounds rather than 15 like it was at the NBC heads up.
Yeah,
and you're starting with 10,000 chips and a 25-50 ante.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of play
you
there.
Actually can play. There's a lot of play there.
Let me ask you both.
Yeah. Big difference.
Let me ask you both about using tells when you're playing heads up, because obviously if you're playing in a full ring game with 9 or 10 people at the table, you got 8 or 9 other people you got to keep an eye on. But when you're playing heads up, there's just one person to concentrate on, and you probably have to be more conscious of what you are doing yourself that might give off information. How tell-reliant are you? How read-reliant are you? I'll start with Phil.
Well, I think, betting patterns are very, very important. Obviously, when you're playing extremely experienced opponents like you're normally playing in these kind of big heads-up matches, they're not going to give a lot away with physical tells. It's just not going to happen. But you can pick up on betting patterns that are exploitable. For instance, if someone is raising too much on the button, then you can open up your 3-betting. But as soon as you open up your 3-betting, now you kind of know that they're going to open up their 4-betting and start 4-betting you more. So it's kind of always a cat-and-mouse game. Like, if you just pick up any hint of weakness, maybe that's a good time, but it's hard to describe the tells so much as like the betting patterns and when you think you might be able to get away with a weak 3-bet or even a weak 4-bet. And God forbid, nowadays it's the weak 5-bet.
No kidding.
Dennis, are you looking for physical tells from your heads up opponents?
Oh, you absolutely always are looking for those. If you're lucky enough to catch one or two of them, then you're in seventh heaven. But Phil's exactly right, and this is kind of a level people play in 5K to sit down. You're not going to find too many people that have obvious tells, so you do have to exploit them in a different way. I like exploiting the implied outs, as Joe McGowan talks about them, that when you have a danger board, when you have 3 to a straight, when you have 3 to a flush, or that turn card's a danger card of some sort, and then betting out on it. Or check raising a person on it. You can get people to lay down hands with almost anything. Your cards are kind of makes no difference what you have then if you're playing against the board that way.
Yeah, and because you're playing almost every hand, you know,
correct.
It's not entirely unlikely you've got the three that hit the gut shot straight, you know, or the six, something like that. But,
right.
You know, for me, I just try to be as consistent as possible with my bet sizing so I don't give anything away there. One thing that I do see people make the mistake of is, you know, sometimes if they've got it and they really want to get paid off, they'll bet like a third of the pot. And if they're bluffing, they'll bet two-thirds of the pot. And if you can pick up something like that, you know, on the turn and on the river particularly, that can be very, very good for you if you can exploit that sort of tell. That bet sizing tell, I think, is a big one for heads-up matches. People just can't help themselves. They really think that they have to bet small to get paid off. They don't think you have anything, and they'll change their bet sizing to give away the strength of their hand. Generally speaking, I'm going to just almost always bet two-thirds of the pot in almost every instance if I'm going to bet heads up, and, you know, I try not to give anything away there. So, you know, if I'm raising pre-flop, I raise 2.5 times the big blind. If I'm betting after the flop, I'm betting two-thirds of the pot. If I'm betting after the turn, two-thirds of the pot. And if I'm betting on the river, two-thirds of the pot. You know, it's kind of like one of those things that that I do personally to try not to give away anything with my bet sizing.
It's Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking to Phil Gordon here on the final table. Phil, which is tougher psychologically, playing heads-up poker or rock, paper, scissors at your annual Rochambeau tournament at the World Series of Poker?
You know, I was out first round this year. It was unbelievable.
What happened?
I'm still sick over it. Look, rock, paper, scissors is a strategy game. Figure out what your opponent's going to do and do the opposite. It's kind of the same thing in poker, but I tell you, those heads-up matches at the World Series of Poker and the 10K event, every single one of those players is tough, and anytime you can win even one match in that field, you're doing something good, and you got a lot to be proud of. So those are tough. I always feel completely drained after one of those matches and, you know, ready to go to the bar for a drink or maybe even two. But, yeah, it's still a lot of fun. That's for sure. But nothing can quite beat the.
I think on the NBC one this year, didn't you take pretty much of a bad beat to get knocked out of that?
I don't know if it was a bad beat, Dennis. You know,
I'm trying to remember it.
The blinds were pretty big. We had seesawed back and forth. I had them all in at a 2-1 chip lead with a 50-50, and it didn't work out. And he got back up to 2-1, and then we got it to even. And then a big hand came up, and I flopped two pair on a king 7-4 board. I had king 7. And he was bluffing a lot, really bluffing a lot. And so he bet into me. I raised and he called. And I felt like he had like 7-9 or A7 or maybe not even A7, 7-9, something like that. King queen. Like it just felt like I was really far ahead. And the turn was like a 5, something like that. And he bet into me again. And I raised him again. And he called. And by this time, there was, you know, most of the money was already in the pot, and an ace hit the river, and the ace was such a weird card, like, you know, and then he moved all in, like, almost immediately, and I just, there was just no way I could get away from it, I don't think, and he turned over ace 7, so he spiked the 3-outer on the river, but I don't really think I can get away from the hand, especially with almost all the chips already in the pot before the river card hit.
That's a no-brainer. You're going to get it in there.
Yeah, you know, you were talking before about the structure of events like this and how sometimes they're at such turbo levels that you end up basically being a shove fest. I was watching the doubles poker championship on GSN on Saturday night, which is this Full Tilt poker show, and you're associated with Full Tilt, and so you were on there, and it was the first round, and you were teamed up with Eric Lindgren as your partner, and unfortunately, because the show is only an hour and they get two matches in between four teams in one and then four teams in the other, it seems like that was pretty much a shove fest too. Was that the way
it was
in reality?
For turbo tournaments, but you know what? I think that's my real strength. I've done a lot of study on the mathematics of short stack, you know, turbo tournament play. And, you know, I think I've got those, you know, what to do with each kind of hand and each kind of chip stack pretty well nailed. And, you know, playing with Eric was a real pleasure. He's such a talented player, and we have such a different style. It was really interesting to try to mesh what he does well and what I do well at the same time. And fortunately, we were able to win that match and get off to a good start in the doubles poker. But I tell you what, that doubles poker was unbelievably fun. It was the most fun poker tournament I've ever played in.
There was an odd moment where at one point, I don't know if you shoved or you called or you overshot, whatever it was, you made a move, and Eric, of course, hadn't had his opportunity yet. You probably had done it pre-flop, and you did that, and you turned and said, you know, I probably should have taken a timeout and asked you if you wanted to do that because you've got 50K in this game too, which I thought was pretty funny.
And you did see people that are normally like loose, aggressive, reckless kind of players play super tight or tighter than you've ever seen them play before, I think because they were paired with someone they didn't want to lose for. Like, I think it made bluffing a lot more difficult. Like, you know, if it's your own money, you can bluff it off, and if it doesn't work, you feel kind of bad about it. But if you're playing with someone else and basically you're bluffing your stack off, like, it's not just your stack, it's their stack too in this doubles thing. And I think that really made a big difference in some play. One of the things that I did, I was like, every time, just make the same decision you'd make if you're only playing your own money, and if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to care. Like, just play your game, and I'll play my game, and we'll play our games together, and whatever happens, happens, but don't feel like you can't, you know, make a play or because I'm going to be pissed off. Like, just do the right thing. Do the thing that you think has the highest expectation, and, you know, whatever happens, happens.
So,
and that seemed to work for me and my partners.
So in that first round, did you agree with everything Eric did, and did he agree with everything you did? Were you both okay with it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we won, so what are you going to do? I mean, it's hard to complain when you win.
That's true.
I think, our strategy was one of the strategies that we'd come up with in our pre-game talk was to, you know, stick around long enough for my advantage to kick in. And my advantage is that super short stack, maybe 15 to 20 times a big blind range. If we can get to that point in a tournament, I know that I'm not going to make any big mistakes. I understand that level of play better than I do the deep stack kind of game that Eric is used to playing. So basically our strategy going into that match was let Eric make most of the big decisions while the stacks were deep, and then let me make most of the big decisions when the stacks got short. And, like I said, it worked out pretty well. And fortunately, he agreed with that strategy, and we were able to execute.
It does sound like a cool kind of game to play, doesn't it, Dennis?
Absolutely does. I love the different varieties. You know, I mean, there's dream teams, there's a duo. Somebody's going to come out with another one. I love the little twists, the little different ways you can play this and make the game exciting.
The thing is, you just always have to adapt to your partner's style, and you're trying to figure out what they want you to do. I mean, you know, and sometimes when you don't do what they want you to do and you've got your own reason for it, you know, there can be some conflict. There's a hand coming up in a future episode with me and my partner where we completely disagreed on how to play a hand, and, you know, there were multiple timeouts called and multiple back and forths, and, you know, it was pretty interesting and intense. I can't say too much more about it because it would ruin the show, but I know that people are going to be talking about that hand for a while for sure.
All right, we're going to take
it is. This brings up, there is no perfect way to play a hand, no perfect style. Everybody
right.
has their own, has to adapt it to themselves. What works for you may not work for somebody else. I could see some great partnerships there. I mean, I would love to see Doyle and Durr together. I'd love to see Helmuth and Mike together. I mean, the different styles could be awesome.
Yeah, and sometimes the more your style conflicts, the better your play, and sometimes the more your style gels, the worse you play. It's a very interesting dynamic.
We're talking with Phil Gordon here at the final table. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis with Dennis Phillips in Calgary, Canada, and we'll take a quick break and then come back and talk some more. This portion of our show is brought to you by our home casino here in St. Louis. That's Harrah's St. Louis, where now you can get in to a chance to win an Aloha Adventure, a trip to Hawaii, a 7-island Hawaiian cruise. Stop in any Saturday or Sunday this month between noon and 7. Go over to the promotion center, swipe your total rewards card, and get your free game piece. You scratch it, you could win cash, you could get some free slot play, or you could win the grand prize, a seven-island Hawaiian cruise for two. And if you get there in the mornings, you can earn 100 base reward credits from 6 in the morning till 7:30 in the evening and get another game piece as well. Also, while you're there, get yourself tickets to the Neil Diamond tribute that's coming to the Voodoo Lounge on August 26th, part of their Greats concert series. There are also great food there at Sammy's and Charlie Gito's and the Range Steakhouse and the Eat Up Buffet. This is our home casino in St. Louis where we play and invite you to come and play with us sometime. It's Harrah's St. Louis. You can find them online at harrahsstlouis.com. Sponsors of the Final Table here on 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast on thechipleader.com. Welcome back to the Final Table, the weekly poker show brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. A quick reminder that if you're going to be in Biloxi for the Gulf Coast Poker Championship, which starts this Thursday, look for our Final Table merchandise there, our shirts, our hats, and especially our sweatshirts, because the poker rooms there are just as cold as they are anywhere else. That's the Gulf Coast Poker Championship for our Final Table merchandise, or you can get it through the Final Table merchandise link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Dennis is in Calgary for the Canadian Poker Tour. Our guest, Phil Gordon, is at his ranch in Washington State, and I'm Paul Harrah's here at Harrah's St. Louis.
That's a good casino. I've been there. I went there for a circuit event a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Ah, cool.
We're looking forward to having the circuit back here in April.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the retooling of the circuit events. I think it's going to bring out a lot more people and a lot more interest in the circuits. You know, the circuits have been kind of a dead puppy here for the last couple of years and really kind of unimportant. But I think what Harrah's has done to improve the meaning of those circuit events and the free roll at the World Series of Poker and blah, 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 I think it's all going to add a tremendous level of interest, and I plan on getting out to a few of those myself.
Well, great. Maybe we can convince you to come here in April.
Very possible. April's a good time to get away from the Pacific Northwest, that's for sure.
if it works out on your schedule, let me know. I mean, I'll get rooms and everything like that comp for you and get everything taken care of.
Hey, now we're talking. Come on.
Yeah.
As long as we can play rock, scissor, paper.
There you go. Maybe we can organize a St. Louis championship for rock, paper, scissors with some of the proceeds going to Bad Beat on Cancer. What do you think?
That'd be terrific.
It works for me.
That'd be terrific.
All right. Speaking of Bad Beat on Cancer, thank you for your continued support, Dennis. It's great to have you on the team. And I also want to give a shout-out to Soy Nguyen, who's at the final table and has pledged 1% of his winnings at that final table to the Bad Beat on Cancer. So far, he's the first of the November 9 that we've gotten to sign up, but he's a great guy. We interviewed him on my radio show for ESPN a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to be wishing him a lot of luck there at that final table, and hopefully we can get a couple more of the November 9 to sign up as well.
Phil, tell us about Bad Beat on Cancer. I think the first time you announced this and made a big deal of it was at the 08 World Series where Dennis made the November 9, right?
Well, Dennis was obviously a big part of the November 9, and that was our first effort with the November 9. But actually, the Bad Beat on Cancer has been around since Chris Moneymaker's run at the final table.
Oh.
In fact, he was one of our very first pledgees, and he donated 1% of his prize pool, which ended up being $25,000, to the Bad Beat on Cancer. And since then, you know, it's kind of exploded. It's now the official charity platform for the World Series of Poker, including the circuit events and everything else. They've really embraced what we started, you know, and it's really gone and grown well beyond our initial efforts. So far, we've raised $3.3 million for cancer research. All the money is donated to the Prevent Cancer Foundation, on which I serve on the board, as well as my business partner and partner in crime, Ray First, also serves on the board there. I can assure you that all the money raised for the Bad Beat on Cancer is spent extremely wisely. Prevent Cancer Foundation has a very low overhead rate. It's a AAA-rated charity. It's you know, one of the best cancer charities out there, and we're very, very pleased with the efforts and the continued participation of guys like Dennis and Soy and and thousands and thousands of others.
I know that Jack Effel, the tournament director of the World Series of Poker, let you get on stage this year and make a yep. big announcement. Did that bring you a big response from the crowd?
Yeah, it did. And this year we had a huge number of participants at that in the Bad Beat on Cancer after the money. We don't have a final total yet from Harrah's, but I expect it to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars even before these guys in the November 9 make their pledges. And of course, you know, Soy, if he were to win this championship, would win $9 million and donate $90,000 of it to the Prevent Cancer Foundation, the Bad Beat on Cancer. So once again, you know, I got to give him credit for stepping up to the plate, agreeing to wear the big green 1% patch and doing a good thing.
Dennis, this is something you're always talking about, the generosity of the poker community.
It flabbergasts me every time. People do not realize the quality of the people that play at these tables and the hours and hours they donate, besides just the financial, but the hours and hours they donate to raising funds and to making awareness of it for the Bad Beat on Cancer, for the Antia, for Africa. I could just go on and name them forever. Phil's been one of the leaders of it. There's no doubt about that. He's associated with Bad Beat on Cancer, and rightfully so. And I'm just kind of proud to be a small part of it. I'm nowhere near what you put into it, Phil, but if I can help out in some way, you know you can always count on me.
Yeah, well, we like I said, we appreciate your continued support. And if people out there want to get involved, it's pretty easy. Go to badbeatoncancer.org, check it out, and just make the pledge. You know, anytime you play in poker tournaments, if you cash, you donate 1%. Couldn't be easier. And, you know, as you know, unfortunately, in poker tournaments, most of the time, 1% of your cashes is zero. Right?
Yes, as unfortunately,
I
do know that.
More than about 15% of the time in tournaments, you're a superstar these days, and maybe even less than that, it would make you a superstar. But, you know, 9 out of 10 times, your pledge amounts to a big zero, and the times that you do end up pledging, you're a winner. So it's not that difficult to make the donation. So we think we've come up with a winning formula. I think the $3.3 million that we've raised in the last 8 or 9 years proves that it's a winning formula, and the World Series signing on and using the Bad Beat on Cancer as its official charity platform is just a huge, huge thing, not only for the Bad Beat on Cancer and the Prevent Cancer Foundation, but for the poker world at large.
Speaking of charities, Dennis mentioned Antia for Africa. You actually won that event at the series this summer, the thing that's put together by Annie Duke and Don Cheadle and some other fine people. And at the end, did you donate back the winnings, $130K?
Yeah, I did. And it was a pleasure to do so. You know, it's kind of a bummer to finally win a tournament at the World Series of Poker after trying for the last 10 years to do so, but and not getting a bracelet and not getting to keep any of the money.
What a time to run good.
But, yeah, it was a great tournament. Obviously, it's a lot of fun to play in that tournament. Annie Duke, who is one of the founders of Antia for Africa, is a big supporter of the Bad Beat on Cancer. She comes out to Washington, D.C. with me a couple of times a year for events that we run for the Bad Beat on Cancer. And, you know, anytime she asks me to do anything for Antia for Africa, it's just a no-brainer to do it. I spent a year and a half in Africa in 1997 through 1998, backpacking around. I've seen firsthand the devastation that some of these things have caused, and it's, you know, it was an easy thing to do. I was happy to be able to win and donate the money, all of it, back to the charity, and you know, I know that they're going to use that money well and help the people in Africa that need it.
All right, I don't want us to finish up today here on a heavy political note, but I do want to ask you about something that I thought was good for poker, and that was the 7 seasons that you spent on the Bravo Network as the as the co-host of Celebrity Poker Showdown, first with Kevin Pollak and then with Dave Foley, and then once you left, they did another season with Phil Hellmuth in your chair.
Yeah.
Not as tall as you and not as good as you, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
But did you...
an interesting guy, right?
Yeah, he is. Did you enjoy that? And do you think that any of these celebrities who you taught poker to with your little green book and your blue book and your black book, do you think any of them actually became better because of the show?
Oh, for sure. They all got better. over time. I mean, the first couple of seasons of the show were absolutely dreadfully painful to watch in terms of poker. They were still funny. I had a great time on the show. It was, you know, it was kind of like being at the right place at the right time, right?
Yep.
I mean, the poker was exploding. You got these celebrities people wanted to watch. I think that show brought a lot of people to the game that would never have played the game otherwise. And, you know, it showed that poker can be fun. It doesn't have to be all serious like the World Series of Poker or World Poker Tour. You know, I get email every day from people around the country saying, hey, you know, I used to watch that show. It's the show that got me interested in the game. And, you know, in my small little contribution, I think getting to teach, you know, some of the nuances of the game by basically analyzing the mistakes, and there were plenty of them that the celebrities were making, you know, I'm very proud of that contribution. And, you know, I love doing the show. I wish it had stayed on air. But, you know, all good things must come to an end. And I guess after 3 or 4 years and 7 seasons, it was time to move on.
Did any of those celebrities ever invite you to come play in some big Hollywood home game so you could take their money?
Baby. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's been very good.
I can see a smile on your face from here. Good grief.
Yeah, it's been very good. I just, you know, it doesn't happen very often anymore. I think, you know, the celebrities have moved on to the next greatest thing. I guess they're all Twittering now or whatever. But, you know, for a while there, it was really, really good in L.A.
Well, Phil, we really appreciate your time today. Let me get some plugs in here. By the way, Phil is on Twitter as Phil No Limits, just like Dennis_Phillips and Paul Harris Show. If you want to follow all of us on Twitter, you can do that. If you want to listen to his poker podcast that he does for ESPN, that's called The Poker Edge, and you can subscribe to that via iTunes. For more information on Bad Beat on Cancer, what's the website for that again, Phil?
Badbeatoncancer.org.
And if you want to pick up Phil's Little Green Book and Little Blue Book and Little Black Book and other poker books, they're all available via Amazon and so many other places. There's so much
more. Actually, just go to Bad Beat on Cancer and get autographed versions for a donation to charity.
Even better. Even better. There's so much more we'd love to talk to you about, and we'll do that on some future show if you'll come back.
All right. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, Paul. Dennis, good luck to you up in Calgary. And, again, thank you for your support over the years. I'm wishing you luck up there, and if you want to drive back down through Washington State, we'd love to see you.
I appreciate the invite. Unfortunately, I've got a pretty full schedule for the next month,
yeah,
but I may take you up sometime and come visit your llamas or your donkeys. How's that?
Sounds good.
Next year, next year, Dennis, we'll go out for Phil's 41st birthday and kick the butt of all those other guys and all those events.
Just bring a lot of money.
Thanks again, Phil.
All right, talk to you guys soon.
Phil Gordon joining us here at the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And, of course, our podcast is available via iTunes and on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Before we go, we always want to get a plug in for the Poker Players Alliance online at theppa.org. That's the group that Dennis and I are proud to be members of and the one that's fighting for poker players like all of us. If you're not a member yet, it only costs you about $20 to join up. You can download their iPhone app for 99 cents if you want to take the extremely cheap route there. Go micro stakes on it. That's fine. They'll take every dollar or 99 cents that they can get. And then they use your money to lobby for the bill that we need passed by Congress this year. And they're also working in state houses and courthouses around the country. If you're a poker player, you have to be a member of the Poker Players Alliance. Find them online at theppa.org. Dennis, anything else we got to say before we go today?
No, just wish me luck. I've got to be playing here in a few minutes. We'll see what happens. I love the heads up, but, you know, it can be a coin flip many, many times.
All right. Well, we'll see you back in St. Louis next week to hear stories about your adventures up there in Calgary. Until then, I'm Paul Harris for Dennis Phillips and Phil Gordon. This is The Final Table. Thanks for listening.